the difference between coaching and training. Training is almost knowledge that you have, but the coaching aspect, when you couple them, and I'm not saying the knowledge isn't important, you know, because I kind of said before, maybe you don't even have to know that much. If you consider yourself a fitness professional, it is compulsory that you know lots about nutrition, lots about training, lots about safety. So that's compulsory, you know, but to get anybody to do it, to get anybody to take action, that's coaching.
So you have a passion for fitness and the desire to start your own business. But launching a massively successful fitness business is extremely complex. The systems, operations, hiring, firing, coaching, sales, and marketing are critical to success. Where do you even start? This show will give you the answers. Here is Bedros Koulian and Bryce Henson, your hosts of the Fitness Franchise Podcast, a show dedicated to helping fitness entrepreneurs launch and grow successful gyms.
Welcome back, friends, to another incredible episode. And today's guest is a dear friend of mine who has an incredible rap sheet. So here we go. He's an internationally recognized coach, speaker, and best-selling author, a former U.S. bobsledder, Division I track athlete, judo black belt, and two-time Guinness World Record holder. He is also the creator of Training for Warriors, which is a fitness company running programs in over 200 locations in 20 different countries around the world. Now, Martin has also consulted for Fortune 500 companies like Prudential, Hasbro, and Nike, major universities including Alabama, Auburn, Arizona State, West Point, Brown, and Oregon State, professional sports teams such as the New York Giants, Cincinnati Bengals, Carolina Panthers, and the New York Football Giants, and military organizations such as the U.S. Navy SEALs and U.S. Army Rangers. Now, finally, Martin has also trained Olympic medalists and both Super Bowl and UFC champions alike. Martin Rooney, my friend, welcome to the show. Super pumped to have you.
My pleasure, Bryce. And hey, as always, great to talk to you. And man, thanks for setting the bar so low there. When I hear my bio, it's, if anybody was listening, they might be like, man, did this guy do all that stuff? But what I'm sure we're going to share with everybody is all those things everybody just heard, that was about 30 years in 30 seconds. So there's a lot to talk about.
Heck yeah, man. Well, super excited to have you on and a lot to cover. Before I do, give our audience the backstory.
Okay. Well, hey, maybe this will explain it, where all the things happened. And I'm going to try to go fast and summarize the last almost three decades, so everybody knows, if you're not familiar with me, kind of where I came from and what I'm doing now. So I grew up in New Jersey. My mom was a physical education teacher and my dad was a business owner. And so both of those were big inspirations for me. I went to college on a track and field scholarship. I was a javelin thrower. And I went to a university in particular because they were one of the only ones in the late 1980s. That dates me a little bit right there, right? I don't think Bryce was probably even born yet. But, you know, right there, you know, I went because they were one of the few universities that you could study exercise science. It was my passion. I loved it. After that, I went to the Medical University of South Carolina. I got two different degrees. I got my master's in health science, but I also got my degree in physical therapy. And in a weird twist of fate, I made the U.S. bobsled team. So I immediately go on the bobsled team. I'm traveling the world, representing the United States. And that whole time, it just, my passion for fitness and my passion for exercise was only strengthened. But when my Olympic dream was over, it was time to go to work. You start your career. And so I became an orthopedic therapist. And what's really interesting is I really realized very early on that wasn't what I wanted to do. I loved it. Nothing against any therapists that are listening, if that's your passion. But I wanted to impact more people. And when I would tell anybody this, they would say, ah, you're crazy. This is a good job. Don't do it. You got to stick with it. So I literally stuck it out for 3.5 years more after knowing it probably wasn't what I really wanted to do. But then in a weird, again, twist of fate, I meet a guy named Bill Parisi on an airplane going to a speed seminar because it was all I wanted to study. And by the end of that, I knew I was going to be working with this guy. You know, he founded the Parisi Speed School. We built it up to eventually 100 franchise locations across the United States. And it's trained over 1 million kids today. And then during all that, I got the opportunity. It was this incredible platform to train all the pros and the universities. And then that led to Training for Warriors, where I was working with so many UFC fighters. I was one of the original guys that did that. I was writing about the training for them. But then people said, wow, you don't have to be a fighter to do it. anybody could do it. And that led to seminars. The seminars led to licensing. And now we've got this fitness program that's being run in, you know, so many places around the world, helping people to, you know, lose fat and build muscle. And that leads me to where I am today. And so I'm currently right there awaiting the, hopefully the end of this pandemic, so we can get back to traveling and get back to a sense of normalcy.
I'm with you there, my friend. And
a mouthful.
That was a lot, but that was good. Well, I want to dive into a little bit of your experience, and certainly the theme of this interview is coaching. You are literally a world-class coach. We're going to talk about your book, Coach to Coach, even talk about, you know, High 10, which is another book that you're just coming out with. But to dive back in reading Coach to Coach, one of the things that really struck out to me is you've had coaches, right? And Bill's, I think, Scarola, you put on your bio saying that what you learned from him is that you can't, you must be on fire before you can let other people burn. So I just want to actually kind of dive into a little bit about, you know, your experience with coaching, your experience with mentors, whether it be Bill or whomever, that really kind of laid the foundation for you to being a world-class coach.
Yeah, well, it's funny you even say it. So when you said Bill Scarola, I'm like, man, is that even his name? Because the only thing I've ever called him, and I still talk to him once a week, 35 years later, I call him coach, right? Like, that's all I call him. Hey, coach, that's my coach. And that was a guy, for anybody, more of the backstory, my origin story. I thought I was going to be a baseball player. I didn't make the baseball team one year. And here he was standing outside the door when they cut everybody. And he was like, hey, kid, you look perfect for track. And something clicked. I wanted to be part of it. I saw how passionate he was about it. And he changed my life. Like, my plan maybe wasn't to go to college. My plan was never to get good grades. It wasn't to eat right or get enough sleep. But using track as a vehicle, he inspired me to do all those things. That and then it leveraged it. Because of that experience, then that was the bobsled. And because of that experience, that was the businesses and everything. And it was because this guy had the courage to stand outside a door and tell kids they looked great and they had potential. And that was my first real experience. And he's been the greatest coach I ever had, and at the same time, and he was one of the first coaches I ever had, and I was so lucky. And it's interesting to even say about coaching, because for a long time I thought my identity was an athlete, or my identity was a business owner, or my identity was a speaker. But I rarely would say I'm a coach. I didn't introduce myself as a coach. And then just something clicked, and I realized all the results and all the things I had done was because of my ability to coach people. It wasn't because of what I knew, because I could know a lot, or nothing's more famous than somebody that knows a lot that can't get anybody to do it, mm-hmm. right? The trainer that's so knowledgeable has a PhD, but everybody doesn't like them, mm-hmm. right? And then I realized, and maybe you don't have to know that much and you can still get incredible results if you were a great coach. And that led me over the last decade to really deep dive into what it means to be a coach, what is a coach, and how the world needs more coaches. And that led to the book, Coach to Coach, which now has spread all over the world. And it's just my, I guess you could say, it's a story. That's what's great too, is people love reading stories. Yep. So it's not a textbook, but it's a story that when you read it, you understand that everyone is a coach. And the book shows you, not only educates you what it means to say that, but also how to do it.
Awesome. We'll dive a little bit more here in a second on that. Specific to coaching, and I want you actually to define your definition of coaching. For me, you know, our audience listening to this is interested in fitness, interested in coaching, interested in business. And coaching is such a fundamental part of who, you know, we are as an organization, what we do. I define a coach, you know, in a trainer versus a coach in two separate things. A trainer knows how to count reps, count sets, etc. But a coach, yes, knows how to do all that technical knowledge, but takes a vested interest in that student or that mentee's life to make them better in whatever capacity. So I'm curious if actually you can kind of get a little background of your understanding of what coaching means, because I think that'd be really valuable.
Yeah, well, what you just said is spot on where, and it's interesting because I just did give a talk about this, and I said a big breakthrough or a big giant paradigm shift I had was that training is not coaching. I, as I mentioned before, I have three different degrees, but do you know there wasn't one day of all those years of education that ever was 1 minute about coaching? It was all about training. I was learning the physiology, the pathophysiology. I was learning biomechanics. I was learning anatomy. but a nutrition, but all the stuff that I learned, it didn't ever once teach me how to get somebody to do it. Mm-hmm. And so if I were to really define the difference between coaching and training, training is almost knowledge that you have, but the coaching aspect, when you couple them, and I'm not saying the knowledge isn't important, you know, because I kind of said before, maybe you don't even have to know that much. If you consider yourself a fitness professional, it is compulsory that you know lots about nutrition, lots about training, lots about safety. So that's compulsory, you know, but what I'm saying is, but to get anybody to do it, to get anybody to take action, that's coaching. And here's the example that I always use, Bryce, and I think this will make sense for everybody listening. I usually ask my audiences, because I'm a big broccoli proponent, and there are other great foods, but what I always say is, hey, do you think broccoli is healthy? And every hand goes up, right? Then I say, great, do you eat broccoli sometimes? Yes. Every hand goes up. I said, great. And then I said, okay, now, because of you, every person you work with that didn't eat broccoli before they met you, do they eat broccoli now? And then no hands go up. Because I said, not just like one person or a few, all of them. And then I said, see, that's coaching. That means you're not coaching enough, because if you know it is something they need to do, but you're not getting them to do it. And then I say, now, if I offered you $1 million, could you get them to do it? And everybody's like, yeah, I'd start figuring it out. See, they'd start figuring out how to coach more. And that's the same thing for nutrition. That's the same thing for putting down the bottle. That's the same thing for being a better person. And whether you want to call it behavior modification, but there's just this, what should have just happened for everyone listening is this door opens up and you realize, holy cow, there's this whole area I have not exposed myself to. Maybe I haven't been practicing because I'm spending so much time on the technical side. But your real value as a fitness professional is your ability to get somebody to make those changes and get results versus you knowing a lot about it or you being able to deadlift 500 pounds or do 1,000 pushups. That stuff's great too, and I think is, you know, relatively compulsory that you should be in shape. But what I'm getting at is your job is to get somebody to do it. And as simple as that, that's how I would define coach.
Heck yeah. All right. So before we kind of tail into the book Coach to Coach, we talked a little bit about, I would love to kind of just tap into some of your experiences. I mean, you coach your daughter, Sophia, you coach high school, you've coached college, you've coached professional, you know, sports athletes, as I hit in your incredible intro. So can you tell a little bit, you know, maybe story tell some of your coaching experiences and, you know, the results that you've been able to help your mentees with?
Wow. Well, hey, and that's a wide range. In particular, hey, you hit a nerve with me, and you know, my daughter and I are going to the high school national championships next week or in a couple of days from when we're shooting this. And so I am the high school track coach for her high school. I was the middle school track coach for 3 years before that. So for the last 7 years, I've been coaching high school track. In addition, you know, in my spare time, in addition to all the other stuff that you had mentioned. But in particular, I think some of the biggest lessons that I got from that is number one, hey, training men and training women is very different. There are two different coaching hats that you wear during that.
In what way?
Well, here's one that I would say, especially from an athletic standpoint. With the boys, I'll be like, okay, guys, this is it. Do or die. This is the race. Here we go. Let's go. And you know me, I'm like this fired up guy.
Oh yeah.
What I was experiencing is when I would do that same thing with the girls, it would terrify them. You know, it would terrify them. They would be getting upset. They're like almost crying. And I realized that how you motivate or how people respond to certain motivation is different. And that's not to say that a female wouldn't respond to that too, but maybe, yeah, I guess better word versus male versus female is coaching is very individual. And you have to figure out how to coach each person. Each person is an enigma. And as a coach, you can figure out the right thing to do or say. So I call it like the ultimate goal as a coach is, can you say the right thing at the right time in the right way to the right person? And man, and that's what I'm always trying to do, to say this thing or make something happen that they make a behavioral change or they have this big performance right when it counted the most. And you know what? A lot of times I fail. I don't want to say, man, I do it right all the time. But because I'm seeking it, I'm always getting better and getting closer to reach it. But definitely, yeah. So maybe that's the biggest thing is everybody is different. And man, if all you have is a hammer. Everything is a nail.
Yep.
And with me, I'm still learning and growing that everybody's different. And you ready? And I'm going to give a big secret. You want to know what one of the best things is you can ever ask a client, athlete, member? You ready?
I'm ready.
So you go like this. How would you like me to coach you? Think about it. Did anybody ever ask you that? And all your sports teams and all your stuff. How would you like me to coach you? How do you best respond? And instead, we smash square pegs into round holes all the time. And it's wrong. And it doesn't mean that you don't care. So see, imagine you're all fired up and you care so much, but now you got this perhaps introverted person or somebody that really it scares them or they don't respond to it. Maybe they leave. But imagine if it's like, hey, how do you respond? And maybe they don't even know or they don't have an answer. But by showing that concern and that compassion, you're already making a stronger connection. And that's what I started doing with the kids is, hey, and here's other ways I would do it. What would you like me to say to you in your race? Or where do you want me to stand? Or how do you want to hear it? And then you're giving them what they want instead of you just, generally just doing your style. And that is... And although that sounds maybe really simple, it's pretty profound.
Well, no, it is. And I think it goes back to your point versus training versus coaching, because training, you have the knowledge, right? And you want to impart that knowledge. But really the difference of coaching is not only to possess the knowledge, but actually to articulate and coach the knowledge. So that way your mentee, your student takes action upon that knowledge. So it just kind of comes full circle. Now that in mind, I interjected, Martin, because you were kind of storytelling about Sophia and about, kind of how it was, training her. So if you can kind of elaborate a little bit more, because I know she has big things in the work, with what her future holds. So give us more.
Yeah. My daughter, she just turned 18. This is pretty cool. So you and I have talked about this. So, she has competed at multiple national championships and in a really interesting thing, it's connected us and, I consider her my best bud. It's funny, the other day I was having a conversation and somebody said, hey, who's your, best friend? And I'll tell you what, my oldest daughter is one of my best friends. Like, that's how I look at it too.
That's awesome.
And hey, it's hard to navigate being coach, dad, and, supporter or whatever. With all the pandemic and everything that happened, one of the toughest parts was that we lost her junior year, right? So junior year didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I can remember us having a conversation and she said, Dad, you know what my dream is. And you said this was going to work out. And now what? Colleges are, there's no recruiting. You can't go to schools. They're cutting teams. Is this all over? And this is pretty powerful. I said, hey, bud, because I call her bud. It's kind of funny. I call her bud. I said, hey, bud, we got a choice here. We can lighten up. We can just do nothing like probably a lot of people are going to do and that you don't have access to a track or anything else. So there'll be an excuse to do nothing. Can't go to the gym. I said, or we can tighten up. I said, we can lighten up or we can tighten up. Your choice. I'm with you on this. You want to do nothing? Then we know the dream's not going to happen. But we can tighten up. We don't know where we're going. We don't know when things are going to come back. But we can do more right now. We can eat better. You can dive into your sleep better. We can train. We can run in the street if we have to. We went to the gym. We got weights. We brought them to the house. We're just using it in our basement, which was not optimal. But man, we worked so hard and I was so proud of her. And the greatest moment of the entire pandemic for me, say one of them, was when she got this text. She was crying up in a room. My wife went up and then she screamed for me. I thought, oh man, it's over. The dream is over. And instead my daughter showed me her phone and it said, hey, tell all the other schools are out. Welcome to the Fighting Irish and Notre Dame. And so we leave in August for Notre Dame and she's going to be a member of the track team there. But this was her dream, right? So Bryce, she had she has a Notre Dame vision board in her room. And I can remember looking at it sometimes and saying, man, I'm filling her with all this stuff. If this doesn't work out, I was getting nervous, but she stuck to the dream, didn't give up. And when probably everybody else did less, we did more. And I really believe that that's a big piece because 30,000 kids applied, only a few thousand got in. It was the hardest year in history to get into Notre Dame. And I really believe all that hard work and everything she did made it happen. And why am I telling this story for everybody listening? Hey, you heard I train pros and I train Olympians and medalists. I'm going to say this right now. That's number one, not more important than training whether you want to call them a weekend warrior, you hear this a lot, a housewife, whatever. No, everybody is important. Everybody is like, you got to treat everybody like they're an Olympic medalist. And here's where everybody I'm shouting out in the fitness industry, it's easy to train pros. You know why? Because they're the most motivated people on earth. Mm-hmm. And they're going to do whatever you say to get better. And they're just, and they probably already super knowledgeable before you even meet them, mm-hmm. right? Like, whereas to train someone that has not trained, to train somebody that never had the experience, to train somebody that's either grossly overweight or out of shape or fearing for their health, this is where the real magic happens. And that's where I spend my time now. So yes, I do all this athletic stuff people like to talk about, but 95% of where my time is spent is in the fitness industry training. And I hate to even say it, but normal people, or I don't even know how, what is the right word for that. But that being said, you know, the most important stuff I really learned through this whole thing too, is your family. And if I would have done all the things you read about, but my kids would have been failures, I would have been a failure. And I'm so glad that I got this opportunity to spend more time on her and make her dream come true. And I already said, it's hard to train regular people, if that's what we're mm-hmm. calling them for this. And I apologize if that's the wrong word, but the hardest person to train is your teenage daughter. You know, or something. Like, because man, in my house, you read all that cool stuff. In my house, I'm the house idiot. Like, they think I don't know what I'm talking about. I'd have to say, Sophia, like, you know, this is like what I do, right? Like, you know, they, like, people ask me about this stuff a lot. But man, that was the greatest moment. And that was probably the silver lining of this thing, is that I got to re-engage with my family. Because I used to be on the road 100, 150 days a year. And that went away. And it only gave me more time to focus on her.
Well, good on you, Martin. And, you know, certainly I appreciate our friendship, but I want to just take a second to acknowledge you. I have so much admiration for, you know, how much you pour in humanity in general, all your companies and your clients worldwide, but specifically how you show up for your family. I think that's incredible. So kind of transitioning, we talked, you know, a little bit about storytelling, about, you know, your daughter and the incredible achievements there, but we did talk about, you know, your college and professional athletes. I want to transition to coach. And before I do, one of the, you know, Fords, it was actually written by Phil Sims, who's, you know, Super Bowl MVP, I believe Super Bowl 21. So I'm curious, you know, what your working relationship with him was like, and then certainly, you know, other professionals, and then kind of how that partakes and translates to coach. So can you give us some insight there?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's pretty interesting. When I wrote the book, I knew there was just one guy that I needed to write the foreword. And so for everybody listening, when an author does a book, a lot of times they get somebody to do the foreword and they don't know that person. It's just a big name. Because imagine if I just said, hey, Phil Sims, I don't even know him. It's I asked and he did the thing. And that would have been great. But Phil and I have known each other for over 20 years. Yep. I knew him as an athlete. But here's what's really interesting. Where Phil really trusted me or entrusted me was to work with his kids. And so I trained his son, Chris, who went on to from high school to the University of Texas. He was the Gatorade Player of the Year, then from Texas to the pros, took the Tampa Bay Bucks, you know, pretty far. And he suffered a devastating injury, ruptured spleen, that eventually ended his NFL career. But his youngest son, Matt, ended up becoming maybe one of the athletes that I developed the strongest relationships with, that I'm still in touch with him today, all these years later. And it was the first time he ever held a bar in his hands. The first time he ever was able to get a dip, all the way to this incredible stuff that he had done, goes on to big universities. He had an NFL career, and now he's a coach coaching young quarterbacks, which I think is really, really cool.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so my big relationship with Phil, and he's always been not only the most generous guy and the most helpful guy, but I think it says a lot when somebody trusts you to train their kids, you know? And so I have had this just such a, and hey, I trained his daughter too. And his daughter married a guy that I'm super close with that was in our program that I trained forever too, probably one of the second most kids that I was closest with. So it's just this crazy connection. And now they all have kids, which is so crazy, which says how old I'm getting. but man, when I said, hey, Phil, I want you to write this, it was neat because if you've read the foreword, he wrote it from that perspective.
Very personal. Very, very personal.
Yeah. One thing to be, you know, a coach that helps people, but when it's your own kids, that's when you really see it. And, you know, so it meant a lot. But I'll tell you, like, that family, and you ready for this twist of fate? I talked about Notre Dame. When Sophia did visit Notre Dame, Chris was the announcer for NBC for the Notre Dame games. And we end up sitting, we're in a restaurant having breakfast. And then Chris walks in. I'm like, what are you doing here? And he goes, it's the game thing. What are you doing? And man, he got us tickets and we were on the field for the game. And it's, and I really believe that only solidified Sophia's dream more to want to go there. And now, you know, that was a couple of years ago. And now it's all come true. It's, yeah. But man, I'll say this, without the Sims family, I wouldn't be the coach I am. And I wouldn't have had a lot of incredible experiences over the years as a result. So it was an honor to have him do the forward for the book.
Yeah, super, super well done on that. And I was definitely curious more than anything, certainly of our friendship, but I hadn't actually asked you that question. And seeing that forward, kind of as you articulated and I kind of hit home, is so personal and spot on. So appreciate that share. Now,
well here, and I'll even share with you a super personal story which people appreciate. And if Phil ever heard this, he would laugh. Phil is the ultimate competitor. Like this guy, and that's how you aspire to be Super Bowl MVP, but this guy was so competitive. The first time I ever hung out with him, we had a chin-up competition. So we're in the gym. This is like the first time I'm meeting him, which is like a big deal. Like he's a superstar.
Oh, yeah.
And we're all talking, and man, we just dove in, and we had this thing where it was we were going to do five sets, and at the end of the five sets, who's done the most? Right. And I mean, first set, he bangs out like 20, and he's a huge guy. And he wasn't young then, you know, he probably in his 40s, and he's banging out. He bangs out like 20. So now I go I was so wrecked the next day because I hadn't been doing like high set chin ups at that time 20 years ago. I'll never forget. Like I couldn't even put my arms down. I think I got like the flu because I destroyed my immune system. But that was my first experience to him where you just saw like this guy is a competitor and does not want to lose. And he took it all the way to his broadcasting career where he's one of the hardest working guys I know. And people have no idea what those guys put into that career too, which is really neat. But that's another insider story that he would laugh about. Now, I'm not going to say who won or lost, because there's still a lot of debate about that. Like, because some of his reps started to get very suspicious. So yeah, and then it was 20 years after that, like training together, training the kids, the family, going to the house, and great experiences.
That's awesome. All right, so kind of transition, we flirted a little bit about coach to coach. I want to kind of dive in a little bit more. And really, it's a story about, you know, a parable about Brian Knight. And really, I think it's important to kind of showcase our audience. First and foremost, we're excited for our Fit Body Bootcamp franchise. We have our annual conference, and we're shooting this, you know, in the summer of 2021. We had it on deck for last year, but obviously the world changed for us. But we're excited to kind of kick off our conference. We actually ordered a copy for every one of our attendees because coaching is so powerful. So long story short, if you can kind of give some highlights of the book and some learning lessons and big takeaways so our audience who are interested in fitness and coaching can learn about the book, but also take some lessons and be able to apply that to their business.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's definitely a coaching book and it's a business book. And as you explained, what I feel or what I consider myself pretty good at, and I've actually done it again a little bit here, is I tell stories, right? If you want to be a great coach, you have to be a great coach through storytelling.
Yes, sir.
And everybody, when I would be teaching courses, there was one course in particular that I used to teach before the pandemic hit, and it was called Coaching Greatness. And I would teach a lot of this information about how to be a better coach. And after each one of those, people would say, Martin, you got to write a book about this. You got to write a book about this. But it never felt right. I don't think coaching is a if this, then that. Like coaching is as much of an art as it is a science. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of that. It's as much feel as it is technical. And I just couldn't figure out a way to write a book that, a textbook how to do that. And I didn't really want to do it either. Mm-hmm. That didn't sound exciting. But then I realized, well, hey, why don't I push my limits? Why don't I write a fictional story that then teaches all of these lessons within the story, a lot of stories within the story? And I just went to work. I didn't have a publisher. I wasn't hired to do this or anything else. I just did it as a labor of love. And man, I just hunkered down and tried to push myself and see if I could write a really cool story. And I sent that in to the top publishing house that publishes those types of books. So if you know John Gordon or Patrick Lencioni, I said, who does their books? I want those guys. Sent it in. And within a day and a half, the senior editor writes back, says, this book is incredible. We got to have it. Let's go. And then they fast-tracked it, which unfortunately, as Bryce knows, and then it came out 2 days after the pandemic, you know, which was not the optimal time to launch a book, right? Like, you know, some people say, oh, isn't that the best time? People had time on their hands. I'm like, no, people were fearing for their lives, their businesses, their families, and the health of the world. A few people were like saying, hey, let me go on Amazon and pick out that new book I want again.
Right.
And but even though it did incredible, and how it did incredible is exactly what you said. It's I believe it's the lessons that are inside. And maybe the first one maybe to talk about is the first piece. Again, I said it today, is about identity. I mean, you won't be a coach until you identify as a coach, and you can really define what coach means to you. And I think that was a big leap for me. At first, I wasn't calling myself a coach because maybe I didn't really understand what the word meant. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand, or I didn't believe that that's what I was, right? If you would have said, what does it mean to be an athlete? I could have told you. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be a business owner? I could tell you. What does it even mean to be a speaker or a writer? I'm on it. Mm-hmm. But coach? You know, maybe even I was the guy like, hey, that's the guy with the whistle and the hat that tells you to punishes you with push-ups when you're late, right? But as I deep dove into the concept, then I understood what it meant and what my values were. And then my identity changed and I was open up to it. So that's the first thing that I think the book helps with. It helps you to identify your values, but also convinces you, hey, if you're a parent, you're a coach, right? If you're a business owner, you're a coach. But if you're a team member, you're a coach. If you're a friend, you're a coach. This is what we do for each other all the time. We're coaching people up. And again, in the book really hits too that right now, and now more than ever, if everybody doesn't agree with this right now, maybe check your pulse because you need to make sure your heart is pumping. Like, the world needs better coaches.
Amen.
We need to be coaching each other up. We need to help people get where they want to go. We need to be excited when somebody else does something where we are not good about that. Hey, coaching is not competition. It's about cooperation. Mm-hmm. These are all the concepts and the ideas that come out through a story, you know, and a story that I believe is pretty engaging. That's why I've had more people write me about the book and say, man, this is like the first book I've read in a long time. And I read it twice. You know, they'll say, I'm going through it again. And that meant a lot because that's exactly how I tried to write it, where I'll be honest, I don't want to go grab a textbook on it and try to labor through tons of stuff and I can't absorb it. But man, to read a quick story that you're never the same after it's over, that's how I entered in. And that's what I believe the book is.
And I think, again, going back to that point, you know, your training versus coaching, training is just knowledge based. So if you just put out knowledge based, you know, certainly that, you know, there's many people that are not going to be able to digest that and take action on. But when you put it, you know, through a story lens, through content that's actually digestible, that's when you have the impact and certainly what you've done, Martin. So.
Well, thank you. And absolutely it's, but you see, it's all in the delivery but even that's a big lesson. Like I said, as a coach, you got to tell stories. So the coach in the story tells stories, you know, so that's why I always say it's like stories wrapped in stories and everybody loves those. You blow right through them, you know? So it gave me a vehicle to get across all the philosophy that I had about being a coach, but I got to have fun while I was writing it too, where usually writing's not that fun. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like when I was writing the book, I can remember going to bed at night and tell my wife, like, man, this thing's coming out good. Like, I don't even know where it's going tomorrow. Like, it was just, it was writing itself. And that's what I was doing. I was going Stephen King style because I've read about all the other authors and how they write, how they do things. And I was just sitting down and I said, man, I'm doing like 3,000 words today and let's see where it goes. Mm-hmm. And then it would just keep piecing together. And man, after a month or two, all of a sudden you got this book in your hands and, you know, and then you got to chop it down, edit, do other things. But it was just flowing. Like, I was in the zone and I think that's when your best work or workouts or athletic performances, it all comes out. And it was very, it was just a great experience and I couldn't be more proud of it. And hey, you mentioned Phil Simms on the front.
Oh yeah.
If you see all the names on the back, So for anybody that gets this book, you're going to see Dan Gable. You're going to see Rudy from the Rudy movie.
Yes, sir.
The movie Rudy. And he said, Rudy said, man, this is a great football story. I was like, what? You know, and Lou Holtz and you know, Sean Johnson, the Olympic medalist. Like, these are all people that got behind the book and the message. And I'll say this, some of those are people I didn't know, right? Like, so now, see, Phil Simms, that was somebody I knew. I'm intimate with Phil. I wanted him to write that.
Yep.
But the guys that I got on the back, that's a true testament to the power of coaching and the story in this book, because those were people that got behind it only after reading it, not as a favor to me.
Totally. And Martin, you know, I'll vouch for you too. And it's interesting enough. I mean, this book hit the shelves last year in 2020. I ripped through, brought this to our coaching profitability team. And this is something that you don't even know, Martin, but we're actually building out an internship program at our franchise Fit Body Bootcamp. And this is going to be a required reading for any intern that comes through the process. So just tons of value there, buddy.
No, and here's the thing. That's why I did it, right? Like, I wrote it. I want everybody to have it. Like, I really believe that's what's so funny is everybody's a coach. I got to get them to understand that. But then everybody should have that book. And here's what I will say too. The book is not the be all end all. It's not that that would be the only book you ever read about coaching and you're done. But what I believe is within any topic, there are probably 10, 15, 20 books you need to read. And that would really enhance your expertise. So for instance, if you want to call yourself a nutrition expert, you better have read 20 books or more about nutrition, mm-hmm. right? Hey, you want to be a financial expert. You better have read 20 books or more about finance. But when I ask people about their shelves and coaching, man, most of the time people don't have any books in that area. They got a lot of training books and they got a lot of nutrition books and hey, maybe they have some financial books or they do like to read some biography, but rarely have people deep dove into the concept of coaching. And I really believe this book, not only did I do that, but that book is a reflection of my deep dive and all the stuff I learned. So you can get a lot of it in one place.
Beautiful. All right. Next big topic, or I guess last big topic, Martin, that I want to go through. And we have so much ammunition and we were talking off camera. We need to actually do this again for round two live in our studio. So we're going to leave a little content for that second round. But one topic I want to hit is your wife, Amanda. And, you know, for our audience who are interested, again, in business, fitness, entrepreneurship, launching something, you know, many times what we found, at least in our franchise, the Fit Body Bootcamp, you have the husband, wife, you know, kind of support each other in that process. So, you know, Martin, you're an incredibly accomplished guy. What would you say, you know, has been the role of Amanda in kind of supporting and really, you know, allowing you to build the companies, training for warriors, you know, have all the coaching success? Can you shed some light there?
Yeah. Well, and hey, and now I'm going to have her listen to this because she's going to love it. And I'm going to say some pretty interesting things. But when I started in my career, Amanda was a teacher and we were kind of doing our own thing, right? Like, I was building the business, she was a teacher, and we were kind of crossing in the, you know, she would in the night almost. And then we had children. And then after our second child, she, you know, so I have four daughters, you know, for anybody listening. So I have four daughters. And when Amanda kind of became officially a mom, and that's what she wanted to do, we were having a big disconnect, right? It was kind of like, I was doing my thing. I was at the gym. Mm-hmm. Hey, why don't you go to the gym? And man, it was a very difficult time, right? And one that maybe we weren't as supportive of each other in each of the roles that we were playing. And then something interesting happened. When I decided to really go all in on training for warriors, and this was it, I knew I needed help and in many areas. And she took on a number of those roles. And here's what I'm going to say now, 20 years later. She is the backbone of training for warriors. If somebody were to say I'm in command of it, I would quickly say she's second in command without a doubt. It completely connected us and gave us this common ground to always be able to spend time on and the excitement of growing it together and how it was, you know, supporting our family. But it became that we understood what each of us was doing and we were able to appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But I guess what I'm saying is, and this is very important, you know, because there is a new book coming, High 10, which you already alluded to as the sequel. Hey, if you're a business owner and you run a fitness business, the culture doesn't start in your gym. It starts in your house. And it was very difficult for me when she wasn't very supportive of what I was doing. But when she became the biggest supporter and we were connected on it, that's when all the magic happened. So I'm going to challenge everybody that's listening. Hey, and I know it's hard, but you got to get on the same page, because I see it so many times, and you know it, like I'm around hundreds and hundreds of fitness business owners, and it'll be the owner is so into it and the spouse isn't into it at all, or the spouse doesn't even work out, or the, or now it's like a negative because the spouse is into fitness and nutrition so much and the other spouse isn't. This can be very damaging for your business. In particular, when relationships go wrong, I've watched it really crush businesses, you know, and undermine them. So I guess, hey, what I'm saying there is if you're going to go out there and help all these people, make sure you're helping the people that are closest to you first. And before you worry about building relationships in your gym with clients you barely know, you better make sure that the relationships in your own house are right. And but here's what I'll say too. And I wish I'm no marriage expert. We argue, we have problems. Like, hey, it is not all roses in my house. Remember, it's five girls versus me. It's like, you know, I wish I could say, hey, I'm the best dad or any of these things. I'm trying my best. But definitely having her on board the same way has been the best. I always say it's the best move I ever made with the company. It's the best move I ever made personally, because our relationship, that man, who knows where it would have gone if I didn't do that. But at the same time too, where I need to be better, and I'll say this right now, and hey, this just came up recently with her because she does so much stuff behind the scenes. It's weird that sometimes the people that are closest to us, we just expect them to do things. You know, so here I am high-fiving every person. Somebody lost a pound, I'm high-fiving them. Somebody did a new push-up, I'm high-fiving them. And then my wife's doing all this work that's a million times that, and I don't say anything. So maybe the best advice I can give there too as a coach of your spouse, your family members is, hey, make sure you appreciate them too and you recognize it. Even though it may seem weird, it's almost like, well, hey, you know in the book, there's something I call the five most powerful words. And the real interesting thing about it is I started to notice it's hardest to say to the people that are closest to you, where it's easy to say to somebody you barely even know. And you need to change that. As a coach, you need to change that. And it's funny. So I just texted my wife the other day and I was like, oh man, that's so awesome what you did. You're wife of the year, you know, and all she wrote back was hashtag understatement. You know, she was like, oh, maybe I gotta like do a little more appreciating, you know? So that was so fresh. That's on my role right now. But yeah, so that is her role. That's what she does. But also too, I get it. If you don't want to make things a family affair, so don't get me wrong. I didn't just say make your wife part of your business or make them run your business. It just worked for me. But what I am saying is, but they should be supportive of it and believe in it and know how what you're doing is your passion and providing for your family. And I've seen a lot of disconnects there. I'm sure you could agree with that too.
Oh yeah. No. And that's so important, Martin. And that's why I want to kind of bring up to our audience. And to your point, you know, certainly there's situations that work extremely well. Just like you, my wife is heavily involved and our partnership is really, you know, I always say she's the foundation, the reason for my success. But at the very least, whether, you know, your spouse is supportive or involved in your business, they need to be supportive and you work as the family unit. Cause to your point, that culture starts at home. So all right, my friend, this has been incredible. We've covered so much ground, man, but I feel like we almost, on the other side of the coin, haven't even scratched the surface. So I'm excited to do a round two. Before we shoot for today, I want to transition to the lightning round, which is the last opportunity to share some awesome knowledge if you're up for it.
I'm ready.
All right, my friend. Well, the theme of this has been, this conversation has been coaching, since, you know, you're a world-class coach. And of course, you're in the business of giving great coaching advice to your following. On the flip side, what would you say is one of the best pieces of advice that you've ever received and why?
Well, it's pretty interesting. One of the best pieces of advice, and it's been coming up a lot lately, and it's funny, and my wife, because we just spoke about her, she keeps using it against me because I used to then say it to her a lot. And here's what it is. You ready? One of the best pieces of advice I got from a mentor, and it was, don't tell me how you can't do it. Tell me how you can do it. And here's what I mean there. Say, for instance, I say, hey, you got to work to be a better coach. The first immediate response, easier to say, would be, nah, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't have time. No, that's too much. That's not my style. That's not how I do it. Mm-hmm. And people often list 20 reasons immediately how something can't happen. Mm-hmm. versus how it can happen. For instance, hey, during the pandemic, oh, my gym shut down, so now I just have to close. No, don't you know, there's got to be ways that we can survive. Facebook Live, Zoom, staying in contact with people, going outside. What can we do? So don't immediately look for the reason something won't work. Try to find some reasons how it can. And it's funny because a lot of times now she'll use it against me because still it's like our natural default. But I'm challenging everybody listening, hey, come up with 5 or 10 reasons how something could work before you've already dismissed it and you haven't even given it a shot.
Yeah.
Amen. It's the only way to grow.
Amen. Well done, or well said. Next up, my friend, habits are certainly foundational to success of any of, you know, your students that take good coaching. What would you say has been a habit that you've acquired through the years that's really helped you with the success you've achieved?
And that is super easy. My greatest trophy case in my house is my library. And it's interesting. So, hey, we talked about me writing a book today. I've written 12. So this is my 12th book coming out, the High 10 book. But I read thousands of books or 1,000 books before I ever wrote one. Now I'm at about 2,000 books read. And here's the thing, my biggest pastime and hobby, you know, obviously working out is a big part. I got to work out. That's just part of what I do. But so is reading. And it's almost for lack of a better word, it's, I guess you could say, an addiction. Like there's an endorphin rush that I get. And if I haven't gone to bed without some kind of new idea that I pulled from a book that I'm reading, it's almost like the day didn't happen. So instead of, I don't watch a lot of TV, so I don't know a lot of those things, but man, do I spend a tremendous amount of time reading. And if I were to say the one habit that led to who I am and what I've built, it's been because of all the knowledge that I've attained through the habit of reading.
Heck yeah. And as what I like to say is leaders are readers. So that is certainly, you are one of the incredible leaders in our world here. That lends itself very well to the next question, which is your favorite book recommendation. We've talked about Coach to Coach today, so I'm going to basically tee that up for you. But aside from Coach to Coach today, what would you say is your next best book recommendation and why?
Well, we just talked about this. And hey, from a personal standpoint, hey, there is a sequel that's coming out, which will already have been out by the time probably everyone is listening to this. And that's called High 10. And that's not just about coaching, but then how do you coach for culture? How do you build a great team, right? But hey, and I'll throw a couple of them out there because I'm never good on favorites. Like, hey, what's the one book? But some of my most commonly, I guess you could say, recommended. Hey, How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie. And everybody always says, yeah, I know. But did you read it, right? Hey, another one, Good to Great, Jim Collins. If you are a business owner, I think you need to read it and digest some of that information, which I think is pretty, pretty incredible. And then, hey, if you really wanted to deep dive into maybe a deep story or I don't know, understanding yourself better too, maybe something like Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. I mean, these are all these books that I think are just so essential that you just, it's almost like that's what we should have been reading in school, right? Like, so that should have been the stuff versus they had me read a lot of books. I don't remember anything from them, that there are just great books out there. But I'll even say this. What's a book I recommend the most? You ready? The next book you're reading. Just go get reading. Like whatever book it is you want to do, because reading is a skill. You got to get into it. And reading one, when you finish, it's going to want to get you to read another one. And so instead of telling you where you should be at, it's just, hey, are you reading? Because there are a lot of, I've heard something like less than 5% of people really read. Man, then imagine if you could be in that 5%. You would be ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, amen, brother. All right, my friend, this has been awesome. Last knowledge bomb that if you'd be so kind to share with our audience who are interested in fitness and business and entrepreneurship, really serving our world, you know, both from an audience perspective and also from a business perspective, what would be your last piece of parting wisdom to help them along in their journey?
Got it. And it's funny, you just used a word that cued me up for it. So you said serving. Right? You said serving. And dude, I had a lot of breakthroughs. We talked about it offline of just this last year and a half. And if nothing else, I think what this has taught us the most thing is I have discovered what is the most important thing in family, in business, team, everything you just said. And that is relationships. You know, it's funny that as business owners, in particular fitness business owners, I've been there like, oh, this person's driving me nuts. These people are a nightmare, this and that. Well, hey, soon as that EFT got maybe shut off or people all wanted to leave and now your business is really being hurt or maybe threatened to go away, immediately we understood that the most important people in the world were our members. The most important people in the world were those people, because then we don't have a business and we can't serve. So service requires relationships, and relationships require attention. And this was a big thing. So my Training for Warriors gyms that had the greatest success and or stayed alive or even just thrived during this last year and a half, those were the ones that had the greatest relationships going in. The ones that the relationships weren't that great or they were, you know, wasn't really there, a lot of those people went away. And hey, some of those places went away. And what did that, and same thing in the family. I got to dive into my family again and strengthen that relationship because I had more time. But I met a lot of people that their family all sat in corners of their house on their phones. Those families aren't going to be stronger when we emerge from this. So relationships are everything. And man, if you are a business owner, how are you investing in that? Because if you are not investing in that, but you're spending either more time on you or your fantasy football league or Netflix, man, then you're probably not going to have a business for long. So that would be – that is, it is. It's the greatest lesson that I got through all this, that these members aren't annoying you. These members aren't a hassle. They are your life's blood to your business and to your livelihood and taking care of your family. So if you held them that precious, you would probably change your service. And if the service changed like that, you'd have a great business. And man, all those things I just said, I got to write some of those down because that was pretty powerful.
Martin Rooney, my friend, man, you are awesome. This is incredible. And I want to thank you for being on the show. Before we wrap today, I just want to take a second to acknowledge you. Seeing you speak, I think back in 2014, 15 was the first time, and then becoming friends with you over the last handful of years. You serve, you are a servant leader. You are an incredible coach. You impact the world in such an incredible way, both from, you know, worldwide, your gyms, your companies, even our company, our franchise, with all the trainings that you've done. And on a personal note, you've made such an impact and influence in my life. One of the biggest things that you've taught me that I think is a knowledge bomb for our listeners and our audience today, it's not what you know, it's the show that you throw. And really that comes down to servant leadership and coaching. So I wanted just to take a second to acknowledge you for that. And thank you for being on the show, my friend.
Hey, my pleasure, and I look forward to the next time we do this together.
In person, yes, sir. Well, thank you so much, audience. I know you guys got incredible value today, and assuming you did, if you'd be so kind to go ahead and like and subscribe on YouTube and write us an awesome 5-star review on iTunes, that would help us be able to continue to provide this awesome content for free. That's all for today, and again, thank you so much, Martin. Appreciate your time today.